WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Democracy is really the method by which we avoid political violence.
President Trump and others in his administration are weaponizing the federal government to silence their critics.
These companies can find ways to change conduct and take action on Kimmel. Or, you know, there's going to be additional work for the FCC ahead.
That's censorship. That's state speech control. That's not America.
Hey, Chicago. This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons.
The federal deportation campaign known as Operation At Large is being unleashed in Illinois after a summer stint in Los Angeles.
Plainclothes agents, unmarked cars, and the refusal to provide identification are not hallmarks of transparency or accountability.
The amount of people, the amount of guns, it was a little war zone.
Those are some of the biggest headlines in the Chicago area this week. Every Friday, we'll bring you up to speed and we'll give you analysis of the stories affecting our region in our weekly news recap. Now, we're going to be talking a lot about immigration enforcement this episode, but before we get to all of that, you should know that during the live show this morning, we got word about some tense moments at a protest happening at the suburban Broadview Detention Center. It's 10:30 a.m. right now as we're recording this podcast. So here's the very latest. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents are still clashing with activists outside of the ICE Processing Center. And the Sun-Times reports protesters remained at the facility around 9 a.m. despite pepper balls and tear gas being used on the small crowd. At least two people were arrested. Now, WBEZ's Sarah Karp is here with me now. Sarah, this all seems so chaotic.
It does. It sounds really chaotic. And, you know, I think that there's been a lot of building tension out at Broadview, at least from what I've read in the Sun-Times and heard from my fellow reporters. And, you know, it sounds like things are sort of coming to a head.
Yeah. Well, I know you've been watching all of this closely as well as it impacts our kids in the region. What reporting do you have coming for us next week?
Sure. So as you heard, there was a big raid in Elgin. And during that raid, there was a lot of talk about how kids going to school were affected because this was right in the morning, you know, when kids would be headed out to school.
Right.
And so we are looking at suburban school districts and what they are doing to help parents navigate the situation, but also to, you know, to make sure the kids come to school.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are some of the outreach? One thing that we found that, you know, doesn't always rise to the surface is that several suburban schools have had lockdowns over the last 2 weeks because of ICE agents being outside.
Wow.
So there's definitely been an impact. And, you know, we found one suburban school district where the teachers are walking kids to school because parents do not want to come outside and take their kids to and from school. I think those fears were really heightened last week. You know, last Friday, we had this horrible instance where this dad was taking his kids to daycare. And there's also a child in a Franklin Park school that was not far away from where he was stopped and he was eventually killed. So I think that there's a lot of fear out there. And
yeah.
We're kind of looking at that.
So many things for you to keep an eye on. And Sarah, you were at the table with me this week for the weekly news recap. So was Kim Bellware, national and breaking news reporter for The Washington Post, and Mitchell Armantrout, who's a politics reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, also covering the White Sox this season. Let's get into it. Kim, we're also seeing ICE raids in other suburbs. So fill us in on that.
Yeah, since the announce of Operation Midway Blitz by the Trump administration, there was obviously a lot of talk of focusing on Chicago, but there was an expectation that this was going to widen to the suburbs for several reasons. But one of them is there's not as coordinated of, well, there is a coordinated response, but you're just not going to get exactly the same level of protest, even the same level of scrutiny in some cases. And we saw there was a fatal shooting last week in Franklin Park. Mm-hmm. Earlier this week, there was a raid in suburban Elgin that swept up several people, including some U.S. citizens. And reactions from neighbors to that have been pretty consistent with what we've been seeing. When there's been pushback about how this is not meaningfully contributing to safety or to President Trump's stated goal of catching violent criminals who are in the country without authorization, you have local residents saying, this is just making us more scared, having helicopters buzzing overhead, having people's doors broken down. Mm-hmm. This doesn't make us feel safe.
Yeah. How has the fear and anxiety over ICE arrests impacted the back to school season, Sarah?
Yeah, you know, I was and the morning that raid was happening in Elgin, I was getting texts from people connected to the teachers union out there saying, you know, we're hearing some really bad things. We're hearing that parents are getting detained. Now, I was never able to confirm that, but you could just tell, you know, they were saying this is a quiet neighborhood. You know, our kids walk to school from houses around there. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going on. And there was a lot of fear and anxiety.
Are we seeing more absences?
You know, this is the thing. It's hard to get a handle on it. You know, the school districts don't, you know, daily or weekly report absences, and they've been very tight-lipped about what's going on. I think some of the superintendents in the suburbs and also in Chicago, they don't want to like create more fear than there already is, and they don't want to open also. In Chicago, they don't want to tell us some about the absences because they're a little afraid that they're going to clue the feds into where people are scared, which might indicate to them that there's a large presence of people without legal status that are involved in that school. So there's some concerns, and we haven't really been able to get like our hands on actual data.
Yeah.
But anecdotally, we do hear, you know, people not coming to school, or on the flip side, people sending kids to school without parents, like middle school kids having to walk children to school,
okay.
Things like that.
Yeah, I've been seeing that too, actually. And for a while, I know there was talk about whether CPS should offer an online option for families that were uncomfortable with doing that, right, with sending their kids to class. Whatever happened to that?
You know, they have been very steadfast. Chicago Public Schools has been very steadfast on saying we do not want to do that. I mean, you know, online learning was not a great success during the pandemic. And
no,
I think that they're worried about going back into that mode. Though, you know, I do think that if things get to a point, the teachers union is, you know, very much paying attention, asking their members, what do you think? Are you seeing huge absences? Also, I will say on an individual level, I think there's a lot of teachers out there that are saying to kids that if a kid's not coming to school and they know that this is the reason, they're maybe sending along work. Maybe they're putting in, you know, putting things on Google Classroom. They're having as much, you know, empathy for people's situation and trying to make sure that they're keeping up with their lessons. So mm-hmm. I think that on, you know, more individual level, that is happening.
Yeah. Kim, Tuesday was Mexican Independence Day. It looked a little different this year because we had ramped up deportation campaigns throughout the city and suburbs. What were you seeing?
I went out to the Independence Day celebrations in Pilsen 2 weeks ago and the one this weekend in Little Village, and they were so different. If you've been to these, you could see it for yourself. I went around asking people, particularly the one in Little Village, which is always, I think, a bigger presence. The people that I spoke to were all citizens, which was really notable. They said in years past, you would see a lot of, especially new arrivals, because Mexican Independence Day is also around the same time as a lot of Independence Days for other Latin American countries. So you would have people come out just kind of to enjoy the overall festivities, you know, take part in the celebrations. And you really didn't see that. I didn't talk to anybody who at least disclosed that, you know, they didn't have legal authorization. There were people who grew up in the neighborhood and said it was so different. You used to be, you know, six people deep. There was no way you could get up to the barriers. And there were empty spots in, you know, some places further west on the parade route. Mm. That said, people who did come out said it was important to show pride, to show some kind of resistance. And I did see other people who were not of Mexican heritage, and they said, I want to show up for this community and show that I support them. So I saw people from all over the city who came out, and they were dressed up. You know, they wanted to wear T-shirts that had Loteria cards. They wanted to hold a flag, something to just show some solidarity, to really acknowledge how much fear was keeping people inside. And you also heard people saying, you know, the celebrations are happening more indoors. We're taking food to people in the homes. People are live streaming. So the celebrations were going on, but out in public, they were a lot more muted this year.
And Mitch, as Kim alluded to earlier, we had a tragic incident last Friday in Franklin Park, just south of O'Hare, involving immigration agents. Remind us what happened there.
Right. It's been a week since this happened out in Franklin Park, and we frankly don't know that much more than we did a week ago. This was a case involving Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, who, as far as we've been able to parse out, he had just dropped his kids off at daycare, and he was pulled over by some ICE agents. That's kind of where it gets a little hazy. The federal account from the Department of Homeland Security is that he tried to drive off from this traffic stop, dragged an officer an unspecified number of yards, and this whole situation ends with this man shot and killed by the federal agents. These agents weren't wearing body cams. The federal law enforcement agencies are not on the vanguard of body cam usage, which are obviously required for most municipal police departments in Illinois. Chicago police all have body cams. So it's also unclear exactly who is investigating this shooting. Local officials have said that the FBI is handling the investigation. Again, like when a police shooting happens, you know, with, a city police department, generally the Illinois State Police will step in for a level of independence from the situation. There's really been criticism from across the board.
Yeah, the governor's also expressed frustration here, right? He talks about the lack of transparency around Gonzalez's killing. I mean, what are his concerns too? Is it the same thing? Sort
just
of
that? Yeah, that essentially
who's taking care of this investigation,
right? Like a shooting of this, magnitude. If it were, to happen at the hands of a Chicago police officer, we've certainly seen cases where body cam footage is released and within a few days. Obviously, there is none to release here. But there's just a when there is a greater demand for information about what's going on in local cases, we've seen more information released.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we can tell, there's not really any timeline for when we might learn more about this directly from the federal government.
And Mitch and Kim, factual data on these immigration raids, it's been hard to come by, right? Because, ICE is not publishing the number of arrests like they used to.
Yeah, the transparency around the entire operation has been something that state, local, congressional lawmakers in Illinois and around the country in places that have seen this kind of targeted enforcement have complained about. Getting specific numbers has been really difficult. Getting a clear accounting of what the operations, what the training is of these people, where the deployment is supposed to be happening, what the specifics of the mission are, have all been pretty murky. And going back to Mitch's point, putting the federal law enforcement agencies under kind of the same expectations as a lot of state and local police with body camera, body-worn cameras and dash cameras was something that was implemented during the Biden administration and was rescinded. That executive order was rescinded earlier this year by President Trump.
Yeah.
So ICE, for instance, DHS officers don't have to wear them. This is not department policy. And as the agency is growing, this is all we know because we saw it in Chicago, we saw it in Illinois, that this is an expensive program to implement and expand. So if this was going to happen at the federal level at a time when their ranks are, growing pretty exponentially, the question is of resources. And that's all another criticism that we've seen from local leaders is how much we're spending on
this. And we should note, you mentioned that that Elgin immigration raid earlier. Two of the people that were arrested were U.S. citizens, right?
Yeah, we know at least one of them. There might have been two. And this has been another issue with transparency. what happens, how long are people in detention. Right now, the government's response has been somewhat blasé. It's that, well, if you're a citizen, you will get released. Released after how long? Released after enduring what conditions? I mean, just generally, this is a civil liberties issue that a lot of experts, you know, said we should be really concerned about, because we shouldn't be, citizens shouldn't have to fear being, you know, unlawfully detained. No one should have to fear being unlawfully detained and then wait for the government to figure out if they made a mistake.
And this continues, Sarah, to trickle down to the kids, right? They're so outspoken about what's been happening. I know we talked about the sort of a little bit more subdued Mexican Independence Day celebrations, but high school kids from around the city did gather in the Loop, right? And they protested.
Right. Some did. And I actually think it's some high schools not in the Loop. They also had walkouts. So I do think that.
So it was all over.
I think that there were many different iterations of walkouts this week. And, you know, actually last night I was with some young people for a story that I'm working on. And, you know, they really want to find a way to feel empowered in this moment, because they are feeling very hopeless and helpless. And so I think the walkouts is one way that they're going about it. But also, you know, there's just so much fear, and a lot of them are balancing, you know, what having to step up for their families at this moment, as, you know, as their parents are, you know, maybe, you know, less willing to go outside or less willing to, you know, do things. So,
Mitch, anti-immigrant feelings, they impacted an alderman in Lincoln Square. So what were the details there? Something involving a rat?
Right. This is Alderman Andre Vasquez's office, obviously a Latino alderman on the north side. Arrived at his office earlier this week and found a dead rat placed out in front of the door. There was a note on it basically likening large swaths of immigrant communities in Chicago to vermin, which is obviously a trope and a pretty disgusting one that's persisted for many generations and has pretty obviously bad stuff going on there. Mm. You know, this is, I think it just kind of gets to the heart of, you know, the really strong feelings that go into this issue, and really some of the ugly sort of sentiments that kind of reside at the core of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the alderman wasn't hurt. He wasn't physically threatened, but it's hard to take that as anything other than a pretty disgusting sort of show of intimidation.
Pretty gross. Before we take a pause here, Mitch, Senator Tammy Duckworth also speaking out. She's calling out the local veterans hospital for how it assisted federal deportation efforts. What?
Like a lot of Chicago disputes, this is actually over parking. There's 12 parking spots at the Heinz VA on the west side that have basically been set aside for use for ICE vehicles. You know, and Senator Duckworth, who's obviously been against the entire federal incursion that we've seen here in the last few weeks, she called that out earlier this week, basically saying, you know, leave these parking spots for veterans who need to come here to get their care. And the response from the Department of Homeland Security is basically that a couple of these spots were, for very technical reasons, out of use anyway, and, you know, it's a small use of resources. So we'll see exactly who ends up getting to use these spots. But just, again, a quick sort of a glance at how this influx of federal agents can affect local operations and people just trying to go about their day.
So we're going to continue to look at how the Trump White House and their actions are impacting us here in Illinois. And Kim, the president, once again, looks like he's threatening to send those National Guard troops here. What's the latest, though?
Yeah, we are sort of back to where we were 3 weeks ago, where the city was poised for this influx of National Guards members. This is something that would be happening against the wishes of Governor Pritzker. He said that, you know, if there is going to be some kind of federal intervention, we welcome that, but it should not look like this. It should not be boots on the ground. This is not going to meaningfully increase safety. You know, he's also spoken out about how crime is falling in Chicago, specifically homicides, and this kind of operation could really disrupt the work that's been done. Mm-hmm. So now President Trump is talking again about sending troops after backing off this idea, talking of other cities like Memphis. It's unclear, of course, unclear as it was 3 weeks ago, whether this is actually going to happen. There are serious constitutional considerations if the president tries to do this. We've already seen this shut down in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is some precedent to how this might look if President Trump tries this in Chicago and then.
But anyone else tired of him playing the will he, won't he game for Chicago?
Like, it certainly keeps reporters like us.
Sir, are you doing it or not?
Yeah. We've been talking about this for what, a month now?
A month.
More than that, I guess.
We've been gearing up for forever, right? And Pritzker, one of the things I wanted to add to your comments there, Kim, is Pritzker also said Trump might be suffering from dementia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Governor Pritzker is certainly not being cowed at all by these threats of him backing off and coming back and using harsh rhetoric about how dangerous he thinks the city is. So he doesn't seem to be fazed by this. It seems like all of the planning and readiness that state and local officials have put together a month ago is still in place. But,
yeah,
you know, this is not something that any local officials have really been calling for. So,
Mitch, Mayor Johnson signed an executive order to protect protesters. Now, does this include legal protections or is it a symbolic?
I think it's safe to say that this is a purely symbolic effort. I mean, if you look at the text of the executive order, basically says that the city will, support protesters and protect their First Amendment rights if federal agents are somehow impeding that. You know, that could include basically setting up like a free speech zone, which we saw that was like a big thing back in the DNC and the RNC, basically just setting up like a park or some area nearby where folks can protest, which for the record is legal anywhere, obviously, is written out in the Bill of Rights. I think there is some significance in the mayor basically, you know, who comes from a very much from an activist background, obviously a CTU organizer, organized labor. And I think that, you know, Chicago's activist community does take some heart in that. As far as what it's actually going to do, should the feds start doing whatever it is they're going to do, it's mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. Actions by the Department of Education, Sarah. Now, this could soon impact Chicago as well. Fill us in.
Well, so we're waiting to hear a little bit more, maybe as soon as today, because on Tuesday, the Department of Ed sent a letter to Chicago, New York City schools, and Fairfax County schools in Virginia saying that if you do not abandon your alleged discriminatory practices, we will pull this grant. It's called the Magnet Assistance Program grant. Basically what they're calling discriminatory in Chicago is the fact that Chicago Public Schools has something called the Black Student Success Plan. Mm-hmm. And also they want CPS to issue a statement saying that students must compete in and use bathrooms that correspond to their gender identity at birth. So, you know, speaking to the fact that in Chicago, students who are transgender are able to use bathrooms.
Right, right. They're threatening to take back $6 million.
Right, it's $6 million. And I think, you know, to put it in context, Chicago Public Schools budget is $10 billion with a B. And so $6 million is sort of like, I looked at the position file. I think maybe in Chicago, maybe like four or five positions will be paid, you know, were to be paid with this grant. And then they were going to use it for professional development. This was a grant that was going to help some schools develop personalized learning programs. So what I'm trying to say is that this would not be a tragedy should this $6 million be pulled. Mm-hmm. But is this a precursor to things that come? That's, I think, the big fear.
So what's CPS or the mayor saying about this?
You know, in the past, the mayor has said, you know, with other threats, he's basically said, you know, we're not going to stand down and we will sue if the U.S. Department of Government tries to take money away from CPS. CPS, however, has been very tight-lipped so far. I think that they're trying to figure out what to do, you know, not only to protect this grant, but just to protect future grants. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, while, you know, everybody wants to be strong in their opinions and their values, Chicago Public Schools also doesn't have a whole lot of money. And altogether, there's about $1 billion that comes from the federal government, you know, out of that $10 billion budget. So I think there's a lot of thought and legal heads getting together to figure out how they should respond.
WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So it seems like the country is even more divided, and I can't believe I'm even saying that, because it's already so divided. But here we are now grappling with the killing of right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. How is that impacting our schools, Sarah?
So what we've seen is a couple instances of teachers that have put something on their social media posts or said something publicly that is talking about the views of Charlie Kirk and how they're offensive to some people.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, we've seen one instance where we think a teacher was fired, you know, some discipline. We heard of another incident where a teacher was put on leave, basically because the school district said that they were afraid for that teacher's safety.
Mm-hmm. And so, just so folks know, so the one that we think is fired was a Buffalo Grove teacher?
Right, right. And that's, you know, so there are these things going on out there.
Yeah.
And
in Oak Park, a high school teacher there was the one that was disciplined,
right,
as you mentioned.
Right. And so, you know, and the unions are speaking out against this. Obviously, this is not teachers have a freedom of speech, I think. So, and,
yeah.
So, yeah, I this is an issue. And there's a lot of school districts that are trying to balance a lot of things, like everybody, and trying to balance a very divided places, you know.
Yeah. And this is happening across the country, right?
Right.
That's what
I was going to say. Right. I mean, the American Federation of Teachers, which is one of the national teacher organizations, put out a very strong statement saying, you know, they've seen this happening and they, you know, this shouldn't be happening. So, yes, this is an issue. And you know, by the way, it's not new that teachers can get in trouble for doing, saying things politically. But at the same time, I mean, we really haven't seen people be fired or be disciplined.
And just correction on my part, it's Oak Forest High School,
right,
where the teacher was disciplined.
This
divide, though, it's playing out, Sarah, at the Northwest Suburban High School that Charlie Kirk actually attended.
Right. And this is actually sort of fascinating because there's two petitions going. One which says, you know, we should honor him, that the Wheeling High School, which is where he attended, should honor him. And another saying, you know, we shouldn't honor him. Well, one thing that I think is sort of interesting is that Wheeling High School has gone from being majority white to being majority Latino. I think I was just looking at their demographics, and I think it's 2/3 Latino. So, you know, that's it's sort of interesting because,
yeah,
I think that's the context that people are, you know, responding to, and that these petitions have come about.
So our WBEZ colleague Mawa Iqbal had a story this week. It was about the Illinois professors who were put on a watch list by a group that's affiliated with Charlie Kirk for allegedly spreading liberal ideas. So here's one professor that she talked with who this person asked to remain anonymous out of fear of retaliation.
Do I have to constantly update my family and my students and have them sort of keep their head on a swivel because of the heightened intensity around, you know, the hate rhetoric that has come out of this space?
Of course, it's not just educators that are feeling the backlash for expressing opinions. Jimmy Kimmel's late night show has been indefinitely suspended. Now, I want to play a clip here of Governor Pritzker. This is when he was a guest on that show back in May. This part is where he's just chatting with Jimmy Kimmel about President Trump. Listen.
Before he became president for a second time and started raking in the money, just which is crazy to me that people aren't, just that alone isn't making people nuts. You were the wealthiest politician, right? Now he has amassed so much money while being president that he is the wealthiest politician.
Defrauding people out of meme coin that's got his name on it.
You're not selling meme coins with your name on it?
No, oddly enough, that's not working for me.
You know, he did speak of you. I'm sure you saw this.
You look at what Democrats have done. Look at Illinois. I don't know how it continues. You have this guy Pritzker. I don't know. He's too busy eating. He wants to eat all the time. Would you like a hamburger? How many do you want? Five?
Yeah, since Jimmy Kimmel's suspension, Pritzker has called it intimidation. Yesterday, he issued a statement that's condemning two of ABC's largest affiliate owners, Nexstar and Sinclair, who he said were capitulating to the president, so he approves their mergers. Now, he urged boycotts and protests of broadcast outlets with ties to Kimmel's suspension, and that includes WGN and ABC7 in Chicago. Mitch, Kim, I'm curious your thoughts on the fact that here's Governor Pritzker diving into this already very divisive issue.
Yeah, I mean, he's been he's tried to position himself as one of Trump's biggest critics for years. Obviously, he's been in office for going on 7 years. And he's really been, we saw this back in February during his State of the State address, in no small terms, likening what's going on in the U.S. to basically the rise of Nazi Germany, which is, again, another comparison that has drawn a lot of fire to the governor from Republicans who say that amounts to, you know, divisive political speech. I think he's going to continue being outspoken about it. Mm-hmm. He certainly has not shied away in the last few days.
Yeah. Kim?
Well, the governor's also correctly identified a big worry here, which is under the First Amendment, it is not illegal. You know, Americans have the constitutionally protected right to criticize even the government that is in power. Now, there's a difference between is it the government cracking down on speech versus, you know, private companies meeting out certain consequences for things that they disagree with. You know, mm-hmm. there is an important distinction there. But when we see how government agencies like the FCC are acting in partisan ways and, carrying out very partisan wishes of the federal government.
And let me add that on Monday evening, Kim, the president filed a $15 billion defamation lawsuit against the New York Times.
Yeah.
So this free speech in our country right now, what is it really?
Very much under threat. I mean, I think they always talk in First Amendment cases about government actions that have a chilling effect on expression. And you're seeing that now because when FCC Chairman Brendan Carr goes on the Benny Johnson show and talks about things that ABC ought to do if they want things to go well for them in the future, you know, that you can make a pretty strong argument that that's intimidation.
Mm-hmm. Philanthropies across the country, including some here in Chicago, they're also voicing concerns about being targeted by the White House. Kim, what's happening there?
So the Trump administration has in this after the death of Charlie Kirk, but also part of, you know, a pretty ongoing narrative that they've put forward is that liberal institutions, institutions, at least that they deem as liberal and extreme at that. Liberal seems to be the bad word, regardless from this administration, but that you know, extreme liberal organizations need to be defunded, need to be shut down because they are putting forth harmful ideology. Now, the reality is this is just, you know, maybe priorities that some of these foundations have that don't align with the president's. And we're talking about more than 100 large foundations and institutions like the MacArthur Foundation, mm-hmm. like the Joyce Foundation, like the Woods Fund, all here in Chicago. And when you look at what these foundations actually do, you know, the MacArthur Foundation, they focus on climate, on criminal justice reform. Mm-hmm. They also hand out the Genius Grants, with I think more than 40 Chicagoans have been beneficiaries of. And this supports things like, you know, poets and artists and creatives who are doing things that make the world better. The MacArthur Foundation, because it's always played on BEZ,
right,
you know, a more just, verdant, and I think peaceful world. Now, if the administration views having those things as liberal, then that is their view and they can hold that. But there's a question of, is something that is, you know, working in the public good. The MacArthur Foundation, for instance, doesn't say we are working for Democratic specific causes. They're working for criminal justice reform that yeah. benefits everyone.
And philanthropies can't, you know, they cannot weigh in on, like, publicly weigh in on political.
Yeah, to have their nonprofit status.
Right, and have yeah. their nonprofit status. So, I mean, you know, it's just a question, like, is a food depository, is that political? Feeding poor people, or yeah, theater,
it shouldn't
is that
be.
Political? Is that a political thing? Or providing after school programs for kids, is that political? I mean, I guess that's the question that, you know, I guess maybe Trump would say yes. I don't know, but it certainly
is something that, you know, audiences should pay close attention to, because when the administration characterizes an organization as extreme, just take a look at what these organizations actually do and decide
what
for
their
yourself.
Mission is. Now, Mayor Johnson's budget task force has come back with its recommendations, Mitch. What were some of the highlights from their report?
It's kind of playing the greatest hits of revenue ideas for Chicago's cash-strapped
bank. Where can I buy that
accounts.
CD?
Right, yeah. I don't think it's selling very well. There's a $1.15 billion budget hole that Mayor Johnson and the city council have to fill by the end of the year. And they're looking for ways to tax more people and collect more money. And this independent task force that the mayor convened basically suggested a lot of ideas that we've heard before, increasing the tax on plastic bags that you get at the store. You know, there's the corporate head tax, basically taxing companies for the number of employees they have, mm-hmm. which is an idea that's floated a lot before. And I think I can safely say is going to be pretty dead on arrival. There's also, you know, this idea of raising your garbage collection fees. So a lot of nickel and dime ideas. But I think the biggest takeaway is that they're recommending that the property tax rates be tied to inflation,
yeah.
which is, you know, a policy that former Mayor Lori Lightfoot implemented.
Yeah, that's the big talker.
Gone away
sure.
the last few years, and the mayor says he's against it, but that's a really big budget hole with not a lot of other options at this point.
Probably going to have to do it. Yeah. Chicago Public Schools is also facing budget shortfalls, Sarah. You recently took a close look at how cuts to CPS's special ed programs are impacting some really vulnerable students. What's going on?
Right. And, you know, Chicago Public Schools officials really stressed that they made some major changes to the way special education resources were handed out to schools, but it had nothing to do with the budget, according to them. Now, a lot of people are very skeptical about that because, you know, what a coincidence. But at the same time, you know, they argue that the way that they're changing this resource allocation, what they're trying to do is to get more resources to schools on the South and West Side who often have a very hard time attracting teachers and aides to serve students. The long and short of it is that a lot of parents are saying, a lot of teachers are saying, school board members say they're hearing it from teachers and principals that kids are not, that they do not have the resources in schools to get kids what they need. Now, in the last 2 weeks, CPS has added back a lot, like 600 positions to budgets.
Oh, really?
So, but the big question there is that as you add these positions, once the school year started, who is going to take these positions? Like, special education teachers are already in very short supply. They are, you know, suburban schools need them, downstate schools need them. So are there enough, like 200 teachers just sitting around waiting to get hired at schools? And so a lot of people are very skeptical about this idea of they cut about 1,000 positions, now they're adding back 600 positions, but will those positions be able to get filled?
Right.
So it's kind of, you know, special education at Chicago Public Schools has been a very... It's very difficult to make sure that all these kids have their services and their supports. It's a very big system. The number of special education students is growing exponentially, which is another story. So there's a lot of factors playing in.
And Chicago Public School lunchroom workers, they marched outside CPS's downtown headquarters on Tuesday. Why were they down there?
Well, so they're in contract negotiations, and... They want to put some pressure on the school district to increase the pay for lunchroom workers. You know, they say that a lot of lunchroom workers are making, you know, not, you know, basically poverty rate wages, very low wages. And, you know, these are very essential people to schools. You know, I don't know. Many people remember the lunch ladies.
I do. You know? Consuela was mine. I remember her. Yeah. She was the best.
Yeah.
One more school issue while I've got you, Sarah. A Southside charter school, it may have to abruptly close.
Yes.
What should we know?
This is a school called Epic Charter School. It was founded in 2009 by some teachers who wanted, you know, to provide a better quality option on the Southeast Side. It's in South Chicago. And yeah, they've come upon some really big financial problems, partly because they've seen their enrollment decline, like many schools across Chicago have seen their enrollment decline. And they say that they just can't make it through the year. It's very, you know, it's kind of questionable because Chicago Public Schools just renewed their contract in May. And now they're announcing that they're going to have to close. And there's a lot of questions about why Chicago Public Schools does not have some sort of way that they could, you know, learn about the future of the financial situation of these charter schools before they just abruptly
before
close.
Before making those kinds of announcements and getting folks' hopes up.
I mean, these poor children are in that school. And actually, you know, Epic says that they're going to try to make it till the end of the year, but they could have to close before the end of the year. And I mean, that would be, you can't imagine how this is a high school, how disruptive that would
be. Yeah, that's awful. Let's take a moment, Kim, and remember former two-term Illinois Republican Governor Jim Edgar, who died on Sunday. Why don't you tell us a little bit about him and just what he'll be remembered for?
Yeah, Governor Edgar, he was Oklahoma-born and Illinois-raised, popular two-term Republican governor, moderate Republican, who one of his biggest signatures probably was his prioritization of balancing Illinois' budget. You know, he assumed the, you know, some of the really tough decisions he had to make that he I think they called him Governor No, maybe, because people would come to him and he was saying, no, you know, this is on the chopping block. So he did get credit for that. He also, you know, very notably won over Cook County, I think, during at least his second reelection or during his reelection campaign, you know, famously Democratic stronghold. I think widely regarded on both sides. Something that I, you know, for covering criminal justice, remember about him is though he was a supporter of the death penalty, he was he had a really expansive view of pardons and second chances for people who committed lower level offenses. And notably, he pardoned former Alderman Walter Burnett for a robbery that he committed as a teen, something that allowed Burnett to continue in his in his political career. And, you know, someone who, you know, he also left, you know, when he was favored to win a third term and became a teacher. He was a guest lecturer, I think, in several colleges talking to students about civic engagement, about, you know, the role of government, and diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about a decade ago. And I was listening to an old podcast with Sun-Times columnist Fran Spielman, where he said, you know, I'm a little bit in denial. I just don't think I'm going to die. And 10 years on, you know, he continued to fight.
Yeah, he continued to fight. And you mentioned, you know, just how he was remembered on both sides. His ability to reach across the aisle and sort of work with both political parties, does that to you, Kim, in your position, seem just so far removed from where we are today?
I've been thinking a lot about what bipartisan leadership looked like in the 90s and some of the positions that, you know, moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats took that, you know, are a lot more out of line with where the parties are today. But particularly for Republicans, you know, having this view of reaching across the aisle in Illinois, that was successful here, you know? And so, you know, Illinois was also a little different of a state politically back then, but it is definitely a testament to, you know, his statesmanship.
So a little bit of sports, Mitch, because I can't not, especially when you're at the table. We've got good news and bad news in the world of baseball. What do you want me to start with?
Let's start with the bad news.
So the bad news is, sadly, the Sox, who you now cover, they're not heading to the playoffs.
Oh, it's not that sad. We all saw that coming.
Did we see that coming?
No, yeah, the Sox.
I was out grocery shopping just the other day with my Sox hat. I'm
still fashionable.
I'm
very cool.
Die hard.
No, yeah, the White Sox, unfortunately, probably won't be the playoffs for at least a couple of years to come.
Yeah, not happening.
Off. But
not
things
happening.
Are looking a lot better on the north side.
Things are looking better. For the first time in 5 years, the Cubs are heading to the playoffs.
Right. They locked up their wild card spot earlier this week at Pittsburgh. You know, the Cubs have kind of run into some second half bumps in the road. They were really hot to start the year. Pete Crow Armstrong was looking like an MVP candidate, and he really cooled off here in the second half. But, you know, the Cubs are picking up a little bit of momentum here in the final weeks of the season. So we'll see how it goes for him in a couple mm-hmm. of weeks.
Yeah, last Sunday there was a very memorable retirement party that was held at Wrigley Field.
Anthony Rizzo, yeah, speaking of good Cub vibrations, you know, it was he decided to hang up his cleats earlier this year after 14 years, obviously a World Series hero for the Cubs. And a pretty cool party at Wrigley Field last week. He was out in the bleachers in right field. He almost caught a home run ball, but he could not quite grasp it. Did not have a ball glove, unfortunately. But he
should
bought,
be able to take that barehanded, Mitch.
He said, I think he joked afterward that's you know, proof as much as anything else that it was time for him to step aside. But he bought beers for folks in the bleachers around him. By all accounts, a good time out there.
Yeah. Any stories that you all want to tease that you're watching for next week? I'm curious. You first, Sarah, because I know you always have so much on your plate.
I just wonder if we are going to be doing anything besides just covering what's happening with the federal government and Chicago. I feel like we're in this situation where that's really all we're covering. But there will be, and there are some enrollment figures coming out for Chicago Public Schools. I think that, you know, after some stable years of enrollment, the numbers have dropped pretty significantly this year. And I think what we're looking to see is whether any of that has to do with some of this crackdown on immigration, you know, if people have left the city, have, you know, maybe self-deported, you know, if there's any link between those two things. But I think we're just holding our breath. Is the National Guard coming to Chicago?
Yes.
You know, what's happening? What is happening?
Everyone
today?
Looks at Kim. Are they coming, Kim?
Yes.
If they had given me a bat phone, I would be doing much better.
Surely you know something. And that's what you're watching next week, right?
I will be watching that. I am actually very interested in the ongoing investigation around the Silverio Villegas Gonzalez killing because, you know, he was a Mexican national, and I'm interested to see if the Mexican government takes a larger role in calling for some kind of investigation.
Yeah, yeah. And Mitch, what about you?
I mean, I agree that we're just, I think everyone's just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop as far as the federal incursion here.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see more immigration raids in the city proper? Will we get any details on the Franklin Park shooting?
Well, that is it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to Mitchell Armentrout, Kim Bellware, and Sarah Karp. Have a great weekend, folks.
You too.
Thank
you.
Good to see you.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.